either fresh fish from the cloister pond or salted herring, along with vegetables, raisins, almonds, or figs. Supper was often soup, bread, and a cup of water, wine, or beer. Meat was not typically part of a Cistercian nun's diet, unless she was ill, in which case she was allowed a bit of meat for nourishment and fortification and to aid in the healing process. On special occasions, such as feasts and anniversaries, the nuns might enjoy what were called pittances, treats that often included eggs, fine white bread in place of the grainy black bread, and spiced wine rather than ale. There was a reason for such basic fare. The restrictions imposed on the monastic diet, like those imposed on other aspects of their life, were a way to master the senses and suppress physical desires such as greed, lust, and torpor, explains Kerr. This would ensure that the mind stayed focused on lofty matters and was not a servant to bodily wants. As Bernard of Clairvaux said, "The body but not the soul is fattened by frying pans." 12th century Benedictine monk William of St. Thierry put it bluntly but succinctly. Black bread and plain water, mere greens and vegetables, are assuredly no very delectable fare. What does give great pleasure is when, for the love of Christ and the desire of interior delight, a well-disciplined stomach is able to satisfy itself with such fare and be thankful. It was important that the nuns stay focused and alert during the repetitive, hypnotizing chants, prayers, and hymns of the daily office. A spare but healthy diet helped the nuns stay awake. As Bernard of Clairvaux warned in the 1100s, anyone who attended vigils before having fully digested his food would yield a groan rather than a tone. However, the reasons for dietary restrictions and other practices, like wearing rough, floor-length wool habits and keeping their hair shorn under their veils, went deeper than their effect on singing or even prayer. Chastity, one of the three vows taken by the nuns upon installation, the other two were obedience and poverty, was a huge concern for both cloistered men and women. Abstaining from particular foods, especially meat, was believed to be an effective means for suppressing the libido and keeping carnal desires in check, which, as we'll see in later chapters, was a major point of discussion during the early Reformation. The White Nun. During her first 6 years at Nimshin, Katharina practiced the religious rituals of the convent, continued her education in German, Latin, mathematics, and canon, church, law, and prepared for consecration. She attended classes with a group of girls enrolled in the small convent school at Nimshin. The nuns referred to Katharina and the other candidates as the adolescent virgins, to distinguish them from the non-monastic schoolgirls. In addition to attending the daily eight offices, higher expectations and stricter rules were placed on the candidates. There was no wiggle room for the girls who expected to become nuns. Katharina became a novitiate in 1514 and was officially consecrated on October 8, 1515, at the age of 16. She took the vows of obedience, chastity, and poverty, and donned the floor-length white habit, over which was placed a black scapular attached to a wimple, a garment worn around the head and chin, and veil that covered her neck and cropped hair. Only her face and hands were visible. A cincture made of rope or fabric was tied around her waist over the habit and scapular. Like her sisters, she would be called a white nun of the Cistercian order, a title she expected to hold for the rest of her life. Although her consecration was an important ceremony and a monumental event in Katharina's life, her father and stepmother were likely not present. Like most of the milestones in her life up to this point, Katharina marked the occasion alone. By the time Katharina was officially consecrated as a nun, she was well-adjusted and accustomed to daily life in the convent. In addition to performing the daily office, she likely had specific tasks assigned to her by the abbess. While the nuns never stepped foot off the premises, there was still plenty of work to do behind the convent's walls. For example, nuns during the Middle Ages often translated religious texts, illuminated manuscripts with elaborate artwork, or did embroidery or other handiwork. Even if Katharina didn't participate in this kind of work, she most certainly had a number of daily chores assigned to her by the abbess, including house cleaning, food preparation, or gardening. Convent life provided women with the opportunity to hold many different positions of responsibility, says German.